is just sort of do this sort of once upon a time. And I'm finding that as I'm talking to people, the best thing is just sort of start at the beginning and drift through and, you know, talk about what you want to talk about and you know, spend...
We're talking about Detroit.
Yeah, we're talking about your experiences mm-hmm. in Detroit. Because basically, in you know, taking the experiences of however many, mm-hmm. if it's 100 or 200 mm-hmm. people,
right.
their experiences, we have a picture of the city mm-hmm. through their own eyes. And so you get a composite. And so I'll just basically start off by saying, you know, when did you come to Detroit, or when did you first visit, or come to stay for a while?
Well, I arrived in Detroit on my birthday. Since I was born at mm-hmm. 523 East Kirby,
okay.
in a house that was, as I recall from the pictures, a two or a three story. It's torn down now. It was torn down about 5 years ago.
I'm going to just stick this a little closer to you.
Mm-hmm. But I have pictures taken of myself as a baby being held in front of that house, mm-hmm. which was a multi-family dwelling, two or three family dwelling. And I lived there because my mother and father and grandmother lived in that area, in that house. And around the corner, my aunt and uncle had bought another two-family flat on East Ferry. So it was very easy from a family standpoint to go back and forth. And at that point, I gather the neighborhood was really quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
And although black people were not allowed to move west of Brush at that
okay.
time or to buy,
okay.
The home that became our family homestead was in the first block east of Brush.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have title to it now as a survivor. My grandmother and I owned it together.
That's the house where we came to take her picture.
Nani's picture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I left Detroit early and grew up in Cleveland. But even though I moved away at age 8, which means that the only schools I remember attending were Balch in the first and second grade. That was easy walking distance,
mm-hmm.
2 blocks. And 1 year at Davison School,
mm-hmm.
when I lived with my grandmother and her husband, her new husband lived out in that section of the city. So those were the only school years,
mm-hmm.
that I ever lived in Detroit. But I used to come back in the summer to visit my family.
Okay, so you were going to school at Balch. And
then at Davison School for only 1 year.
And then when did you leave?
I left when I was 8.
Okay. And then came back during the
summer. I remember Balch because I got double promoted there, which meant I wound up graduating from high school in January.
What a bummer.
It really was.
Yeah.
Now I would think of all kinds of exciting things to do with that 8-9 months. But later on, as a high school graduate, then I didn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think my family was too creative. I just signed up for a couple of
mm-hmm.
courses. So
mm-hmm.
that was all. Then I moved to Cleveland. But I always came back regularly in the summers,
mm-hmm.
except the summer of the big riot in 43.
Mm-hmm.
They would not let me come here
mm-hmm.
then because they felt it was too dangerous. So I think that was really the first real awareness I had
mm-hmm.
of the capacity for viciousness.
Mm-hmm.
and physical harm in terms of racial violence. I really had a rather sheltered existence up to that point. So I came here in the summers. I met the person who was Claudia House then. She's now the Honorable Claudia Morcombe, Circuit Court Judge. She and I used to go swimming and go to summer day camp at Lucy Thurman YWCA. And we did swim every single day.
And what was day camp like there?
Oh, let's see. We went on excursions.
Did you meet her there? You met her at day camp?
Yeah. We went on excursions. And mostly I remember the swimming. Because we both were very gung-ho about swimming down. And we had a swimming team at one point. We even went to Cleveland for a swimming meet. And that was really the way we spent the afternoon.
Now, the Lucy Thurman Y was it
was
all
the headquarters for the what I would call the black intelligentsia at that time.
How did it happen to be developed, do you know?
I really don't know. I know only that it was very well maintained. And
who ran
the
it?
Food there, I don't remember the people.
Was it the staff? Was the staff black?
Yes.
So it was an entirely separate sort of Y.
Absolutely. YMCAs and YWCAs were totally segregated at that time in every city. And I remember there was a lovely library area up on the second floor where parties were held. Even at Christmas time, when I came over to visit at Christmas time, the young people at high school age would have chaperone parties there. And the cafeteria had really excellent food. I've not been in another cafeteria where the food was as good, except maybe the old Colonnade. And the men who were gathering at that time talking politics, unfortunately the women were not as busy talking politics. They talked arts and letters, the groups that convened, but they were not into political activism to that extent at that point, that I, as I can recall. So
now the men met at the Lucy Thurman Y?
Much of it was informal. But many of the men who later emerged as black leadership in the city would remember Lucy Thurman Y.
Many of them have mentioned it. Had, you know, we'll have a group.
That was a very important part of the black community's history in this city, I know.
Yeah, I understand that.
And also St. Matthew's Church, which was right across the street, which was the so-called fancy schmancy church.
Yes, I have learned that these churches are ranked very...
Oh, no question about it. I think you had to take a color test to belong to St. Matthew's. Really?
Really?
Yeah.
The tea test?
Yeah, really. Had to be. And I know that the mayor has mentioned the big difference between East Side and West Side. I really wasn't aware of that. And because I guess we were so close to Woodward's, and we didn't really consider where I came to visit East Side. Although it was technically East Side. But I didn't know the West Side at all. North Woodward was
the north
popular...
End. North End? The North End area?
Yeah. That was where the Roxborough House was. And Claudia lived out that way. Which is just... Well, it's gone now because they widened Oakland. right at Woodland,
mm-hmm.
where the Chrysler
mm-hmm.
development has taken place mm-hmm. out there. So that was 'all of Detroit that I remember until I didn't come here to live until after college.
Well, when now
I knew things like the Gotham, for example.
Now that was your uncle who owned the Gotham?
Yes, he was married to my ex-uncle by that time. He had been married to my mother's sister.
Okay.
But I have been closer to him than most youngsters would have been, simply because they had no children.
Mm-hmm.
And they had owned this house on Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I camped there all the time.
Ah.
And he was like the father figure
mm-hmm.
who taught me to swim and taught mm-hmm. me poetry and
even took me
shopping.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Only man I ever knew until I was much, much older really took me shopping.
Hmm. What?
He had elegant taste, though.
Did he? What kind of poetry?
The American poets like
mm-hmm.
James Whitcomb Riley
right?
and people of that sort.
That's so unusual for a man.
Mm-hmm. But I remember Riley in particular
mm-hmm.
when the book was around. Actually, he had come from Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the family was relatively cultivated
mm-hmm.
in terms of literature and
mm-hmm.
so on. But that and operettas. He loved Victor Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned all Victor Herbert songs. So.
Did you hang out at the Gotham?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He lived there.
Okay.
So I knew that he had great skills as a poker player.
Mm-hmm.
And he took his daily constitutional when he was in town, because he went away in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, he went to a place he had up near Kalamazoo. Near South Haven, actually. He and my aunt had this beautiful, it was an estate, actually, in the country. And I used to spend a lot of time there in the summers when I was young. You know, right down the backyard to a lake and so on. But he went walking every afternoon. When he was in town, did his constitutional from the Gotham to the DIA and back. And I have a picture taken on the stage of the Paradise because he would keep me posted on who was playing and
uh-huh.
so on. I came one spring vacation to visit. And he took me over and we had our pictures taken with Lionel Hampton so I could,
okay.
you know, keep that. And then he would send me a postcard when Billy Eckstein came to town
mm-hmm.
because he was a big hit at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really got a fairly good handle on the folks who were around
mm-hmm.
the Gotham. John White, who was the ostensible owner of the Gotham.
Oh, okay, so your uncle was not John White?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
His name was Irving Rome.
Oh.
He owned the mortgage.
Ah, okay, yeah, I thought John White was the owner.
Mm-mm.
Hmm.
Not really.
Okay.
Well, I'll put it this way. My uncle put up the money.
Mm-hmm.
John White got, I think, a check for $400,000 from the city. And this would have been 61
mm-hmm.
or so. But, you know, he hadn't paid off the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much, but it was
mm-hmm.
owed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But John White, I remember because he had worked for my uncle. He and a man named Eddie Cummings had been the two
mm-hmm.
lieutenants of the gambling business.
Yeah, Eddie Cummings didn't want to be on the view.
That's too bad.
Well, what I'm hoping is that...
See, he and his wife Dorothy used to come to the place in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And he and John White were side by side as the two lieutenants. It was my uncle and his partner, a man named Thomas Hammond, who really were the owners of the business.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally Mr. Hammond's alone, and then my uncle went to work for him, or so the story I've been told. And he asked him once what he was doing with his money, and when he showed him, he said, if you're that good, you can watch mine too. And then they became partners.
Oh.
And my uncle was always Mr. Inside. He was never out front.
Okay.
He didn't do the salesmanship pitch or anything of that kind. He just liked his numbers. Excuse me. Paul?
They had, that was sort of a headquarters of the numbers?
What?
At the Gotham?
Yeah.
Or, no. They just...
No, Gotham was bought long after the business started. Business probably started in the early 30s. It was well established by then. Because I can remember my uncle and aunt going to South America on a cruise ship in 37. From, I have the booklet, the passenger list. From this ship that went to Rio, and Buenos Aires. So it would have had to have been in good financial form to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was the day when they had trunks. I still have her white rawhide trunk. You know, people don't do that anymore.
Well, now, they had gambling at the hotel, though?
Only private.
Mm-hmm.
Only a private poker game. It wasn't anything like Vegas or anything like that. In the penthouse, they had a private poker game that used to go on the weekend. I don't think it went on at all.
And so Cummings and the other, who was the other person?
John White.
Were lieutenants? And what
I call it lieutenants. Uh-huh. They were the operating managers of the numbers game, the numbers business.
Well, how was the numbers business connected with the Gotham?
Because, only because of the personalities. It didn't come out of business. But undoubtedly the money to buy it came from the business.
So was the Gotham the location of anything to do with the numbers? They just happened to be in both things.
You know, the money was already there from the numbers operation and so on. So just like you'd make money at some enterprise or whatever, then fine. And that was the way black people who at that time had some kind of business acumen made money.
Yeah.
It was about the only thing open to them.
Yeah.
To make serious money.
Right.
And they were not, it was not a business that was into violence or, you know, guns or muscling people or anything like that. You just had a business and nobody had their arm twisted to bet. If they wanted to bet, they bet.
Didn't some people go to jail for being involved in the numbers?
I'm sure, because just like right now, it's still illegal in this state to gamble.
Yeah.
But everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that the state now does what the numbers bankers used to do.
Yeah. But at that time, what made them crack down on the numbers when they sent people to jail, do you know?
Probably somebody got caught taking money who was a public official. Because let's face it, you can't do all that without paying somebody else.
Right, exactly. I'm sure police were paid off.
Just like the same thing is going on now with dope, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah.
There's no conceivable way it could function. Yeah. There's a house that I have called on repeatedly. They have raided two or three times, and they come right back.
Yeah.
Now, how can they do that without protection in that precinct?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I've gotten those tales from people, you know, from about, from the 60s, a woman who lived on Woodward, and she would see in the middle of the night police cars drive up, and someone from an apartment would send down a rope, and the police officers would tie this bag to the end of the rope, and then the rope would go up. This was in the 60s.
Oh, sure. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
But this was all the source of the money. The Diggs family really got established out of money from these people. I mean, there was a loan or financial backing. Not my uncle, but his partner backed Diggs Sr. And gave him the money to really get established in the funeral business. And the same thing happened in insurance. The insurance company, Great Lakes Mutual Insurance, came, the money for that came from John Roxburgh.
Oh, okay. Now,
the money to train Joe Lewis and make it possible for him to be a champion came from John Roxburgh's numbers business.
Oh, okay.
Because he and my uncle and his partner and a man named Everett Watson.
Yeah, that's a familiar name.
Well, I remember meeting him just once. He and his wife came for dinner at my aunt and uncle's house. There were a few more, but they were lower level. These were the heavy hitters.
Where did, do you happen to know where people gathered? I mean, where all the money went? Where were the locations?
No, they changed all the time.
Did they? So yeah. That, to keep it secret, so yeah. They'd always have a different location?
Yeah.
Because the only thing they had to keep secret was the office. Where they ran the tapes. You know, as the tickets came in, they ran the adding machines. And I knew that the sound of an adding machine meant that they were working someplace.
How did the numbers work? You know, how exactly?
You bet on. They had two kinds. One called policy.
That I've heard of.
And that was, you know, you bet two-digit, one or two-digit numbers. Then there was one called clearinghouse. That was the three-digit number. And the odds were 500 to 1 on clearinghouse. I don't know how they figured the odds on policy.
And what would you do? You would just write the number down somewhere? Or?
Well, they had special pads that the pickup people came, went to the houses.
Okay, and you wrote it on this pad and wrote your name?
No, you didn't write your name.
No, you didn't. What did you, then how did they,
you
did
had
you?
A receipt. Okay. That said what,
okay,
the,
what
and
you
the
did.
Date.
Okay.
And how much you were betting for.
And people, you said people went to people's houses?
Oh, there were pickup men.
That would go from house to house?
One man who later became a very successful numbers banker told me that when he was really accumulating serious money to be a numbers banker, he got to the point where he made 60 stops every morning.
60 stops every morning.
So
then there were...
I've never seen anybody who could get in and out of a car that fast.
I'll bet. Would they go around neighborhoods? Would they have like routes, like a newspaper
Absolutely.
Boy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they became more or less valuable to the bankers depending upon what kind of route they had.
So then they sort of freelance to the bankers? I mean,
mm-hmm.
they sure. would contract. So one...
So-and-so worked for this one, and other people
okay.
worked for other people. But each major banker or team of bankers would have certain people who were there pick up people.
And then, so they'd go around.
Was it very organized?
Yeah, I guess.
Commercial enterprise.
They'd go around and they would pick up the money,
mm-hmm.
take it to wherever the location was at that time.
She'd check it out. And they would check it out in the afternoon. And then they would pay by nightfall.
Okay, and then how did they come up with the winning number?
I don't know. At one point they used to use this. Different cities did it differently.
Mm-hmm.
On policy they used to shake the can and they'd pull out numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the racetrack results.
Okay.
For the clearinghouse.
Okay.
So much out of the total mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
That was totaled at such and such a track. Because
mm-hmm. okay.
I know they used to move from one track to another.
Now, was there just in each city, was there just one person in charge? In other words, were there different games going on? Or was it just all part of one game?
No, all part of one game.
So everybody was buying into the same number, essentially. And there weren't like secondary prizes, there was just
mm-hmm.
the prize of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And
although it's like it is now, straight or box.
Yeah, see, I've never bought a lottery ticket.
Yes, yeah, well, straight is, those are the numbers you want a certain way.
Uh-huh.
Box is the same three numbers,
okay.
but any
okay.
way at all.
Oh. So then they could get some sort of prize if they had the numbers.
If they bet it that way.
Okay.
They didn't mm-hmm. forget it.
Mm-hmm. Then how did how much would a numbers how much would not what did you call it a ticket or what did they call it whatever you bought?
Yeah. You can bet however much you want.
No, but I mean, what would they call the...
They didn't call them anything.
They didn't call them anything.
Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be what's your play.
Okay, what's your play. Now, how much would that cost? How much would one cost?
Oh, they used to do it for pennies. And dimes and 20 cents and
mm-hmm.
all that sort of thing.
So did
and then it got to be $1 or $5.
So there was a set. Was there a set price, or you could bet a certain amount, and then you'd get proportionate to that?
Mm-hmm. There's a set price.
Okay. So it was. If it was 10 cents, it was 10 cents for everybody, and it was only.
No,
10
it's
cents.
10 cents. The odds were 500 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
So you get $5. You bet $1, you got $500.
Oh, okay.
Which is just like what we
yeah.
have now.
Yeah.
But most of them had a limit of how much they would take on one number.
They had a limit?
And how much you could bet on any one number.
Okay. And how many numbers did they pick during the day?
Oh no, there would just be two.
There would just be two numbers total.
Mm-hmm.
And so
not in policy, but we're talking clearinghouse
yeah.
now.
Okay.
They call it the first race and the last race.
It is interesting.
I wish
yeah.
I had been able to get more of it on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and more of it on tape. I could have gotten it from my uncle in Cleveland.
Yeah.
But my aunt wouldn't let him talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's so persnickety about what's proper.
Well, you know, I think that I remember I interviewed When I was doing the Paradise Valley story, I interviewed John Roxborough. And at the time, I had no knowledge that he was involved in the numbers at all. And so, but when I interviewed him, he was very, very careful to tell me very little. And I didn't realize it till later, when I found out that he had been involved in the numbers, that was why.
Well, you see, it was so bizarre. I knew that family because I used to date his nephew.
Oh.
And he had two brothers, one of them who became a lawyer and a state senator and so on, and the other one who became the numbers banker. And of course, financially, the one who was the numbers banker became more successful.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I think still today, people who were involved don't want to talk about it.
I know. Well, they could probably strangle me because they know perfectly well that I know about it.
Yeah. And I don't think it should be something.
I mean, I know somebody came up to me once and said something that was very sort of hush hush. And I said, you can speak more plainly than that.
Mm-hmm.
At least I can.
Yeah.
Because I have nothing but admiration for this business.
Yeah,
the things that people have thought were so impressive about me, the Smith College, the junior year abroad, all those things, the private tutors for language and so on, all came out of numbers money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that in the world.
Yeah.
I'm just sorry that while they were at it, they didn't also turn me into an investment banker. But it's a girl. You know, what was I going to have to do? Seriously. No.
Would you say of the people who were involved, like the people who got rich or made a lot of money on the numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did they make a lot of money on it? How did they,
what
was
their
situation?
Because you took in a lot more than you paid out.
So were there sort of, there were like, things would come to this place and then they would go to another place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there were there was a central spot here, but
no.
Then there was, no.
Only the office that processed the tickets and so on. And that was a different one for each company. It was like a whole set of separate businesses. Where there were competitors, really.
Okay, so let's say that just for the sake of trying to understand this, is that we have Mr. X here who's involved, right?
Yeah, he's the boss of Unit 1.
Okay, Unit 1. Okay, so Mr. Y is Unit 2?
That's right. That's a separate business.
Okay. And then Mr. Z is Unit 3.
Let's say you got half a dozen. And each one has a network of people who turn in to them.
Okay, so these are all the people that go and pick up, right?
No.
No.
Those are the bankers. Each one has a whole tribe of people turning into him.
Okay, now, let's start.
They probably have 20 people who are pickup men that turn into them.
Okay.
And then 20 people,
so
each one will have a
Mr.
route.
Mr. X has 20 people that pick up.
Mm-hmm. And each pickup may turn in $1,000 a day.
Okay. Now, then this all goes to one central of these?
No. They're all separate businesses, remember.
Oh, okay. But this person who comes up with the number over here is...
You don't have a person who comes up with it if you're going by what the number is in the paper.
Okay. But the policy...
Policy, each organization would pick its own numbers and publish them.
Okay. All right. How many organizations were there?
It was policy that my uncle and his partner operated here. It was called the Alabama and Georgia. and they had one called a yellow dog. That wasn't theirs, that was somebody else's. But those are the only ones I know. I don't know the other
names. How many different businesses were there in the city then?
I don't remember. There had to be at least half a dozen.
Okay.
And those are just the black ones that I know about. I think after a while, seems like people learn about this business. Really?
Yeah.
Well, it became dangerous after the mafia found out how much money was involved.
Right.
Because then they wanted to control what number you paid on. And by that time, there was no more policy. There was just a three-digit number.
When did the mafia get involved?
About World War II. About then.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did numbers start?
My uncle in Cleveland retired. He was in the same business.
Mm-hmm.
But he retired. He said, what do I need this street for?
Yeah.
I'm invested in private things,
yeah.
You know, that are legitimate. And then you've got the mafia coming at you in one way, and you've got Internal Revenue trying to make reef for you on the
right.
other side.
Right. When did all this start? When did numbers start?
I don't know, but I know it was before I was born. I'm telling you, they were very well established in at least Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago by the early 30s.
I'm surprised that it took the mafia that long to...
Well, they weren't established either. They were busy with Prohibition.
Oh,
see, Prohibition
and so then...
ended.
And they needed something else to make money on.
I'm sure. But they were not a problem until at least the 40s, I'm sure.
Okay.
I don't remember ever hearing any problem about that.
What would you say that among these people there was any sort of common thing about them? They sound like they were all intelligent.
They were really quite, I call them the gentleman gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were, for the most part, highly intelligent. Many of them were very polished. The family called the Jones brothers in Chicago were absolutely something else again. He had a mother and three brothers who ran the business. And the oldest and the men were gorgeous. I remember how gorgeous they were. I saw some of them, a couple of them, when I was a little girl. And the oldest brother and his wife went on the trip with my aunt and uncle to South America. But the mafia kidnapped the oldest brother. And the family paid $200,000 in cash. This is 1940.
Wow.
When $200,000 in cash was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And after that, they moved.
Mm-hmm.
They set him up so that he was convicted of something. I think income tax evasion. And when he got out, they simply, the whole family moved to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they invested in a textile factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have a home on the French Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
But the daughter, I think, went to med school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. Well, I hope that somebody who was involved will be willing to talk.
There's almost nobody left.
Yeah.
The uncle I had in Cleveland who raised me just died last night. Mm-hmm. He was 95.
Well, there's Cummings.
He's the, and there's one other man I know who's in town, but I don't think he'll talk. If he will, I'm going to get him to talk to a tape recorder.
Was that Forrest Rogers? Is that?
Mm-hmm.
No? No, okay. I have another name, and I can't remember who it was.
No, I wouldn't use it
no,
without asking
no,
him.
No, no.
Cummings, he's a family friend.
Yeah, a number of people. I guess, I think Cummings was a member of St. Paul's Church, St. Paul.
He
and
is
the other one,
now, I
yeah,
think.
And I think the other one also. So maybe Dr. Ardrey can talk them into it. But
well, all the money that supports that church comes from
mm-hmm.
that source.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the one he's gotten.
Yeah. Yeah, he gave me the names, but I'll have to get him to intervene and see if they'll be willing to talk, because I think that it isn't a negative story, you know, certainly.
But people don't want any problems. They don't want a problem with taxes, first of all.
Okay.
And so on. One of the people who was in that business that I was very close to at one point said, I can't understand why these people don't pay more taxes. Because basically he used to decide how much he was going to pay at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted it to be enough so that he could do anything he wanted
mm-hmm.
to do. But he wasn't going to tell him all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was paid cash.
Mm-hmm.
He had no checking account. He had no paper trail whatsoever.
Mm. So you had to be pretty smart to be in this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
To be successful.
Very, yeah.
To rise above the level
yeah.
of the local.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up me.
Yeah.
And they're very talented, very bright men.
Yeah.
But of course that's disappearing now. It's almost gone.
The numbers, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last time I remember hearing about it is when I was doing the Paradise Valley story, and I went into the 606 and I asked for the lady who owned it then, and she said, oh, she's out on the run. And I thought that was really, it was sort of funny that they would tell
me. You know, some people are still betting the number in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay 600 to 1 instead of 500 to 1, such as you get in the state lottery.
Uh-huh.
They pay on the same number.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But you have to have a lot of faith that that person will pay off.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas you know the state will pay.
Right.
You don't know whether these people
yeah.
will.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was a lot more charming back then.
Oh, it was a different world.
Yeah.
You see, these people, really, when they worked, they worked, and when they partied, they
mm-hmm.
partied. Up in the country where my uncle had this place,
mm-hmm.
there were a number of people who had very, very nice country homes
mm-hmm.
up there. I'd say within 10, 15 miles of each other.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago folks would
mm-hmm.
have their headquarters.
This is in Idlewild?
No. This is near South Haven.
Mm-hmm.
Idlewild was also an enclave and
mm-hmm.
so on. But, like, my uncle was not a crowd person.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't want Idlewild because he wasn't a big drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't gamble at all on a personal level,
uh-huh.
except in his poker games, which he was supposedly the very best poker
really?
Player altogether. And then they used to have a game they called Tonk. And they played that one night, and I got to play. I won enough money to buy a convertible car.
Oh my gosh, really?
I did, and I beat my famous uncle. It was a big night.
I think you missed your calling.
I know I did. They just didn't give me the bankroll to go with it. They had wine-colored carpeting in this house. And we were all sitting on the floor playing cards, right? And I swear the floor was green. That's the truth. The first car I ever bought for me personally.
That's great. What kind of car? Then what did you buy?
A white Chevy convertible
ah.
with the red interior. But it was more than that. It was I beat my uncle.
Yes,
and
right.
he didn't mind
and
at
you
all.
Quit
he
them.
Thought it was wonderful.
And you
yeah.
quit them.
Oh yeah, but I'm still pretty good at. If we play, I play with the grandson sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Or some daughter, and they play pennies and
uh-huh.
nickels.
My son. It's incredible. Ever since he's been very little, no one can win any game when they're playing with him.
Send him to Vegas with the bankroll.
It's
he's
incredible.
Wasting his time doing whatever he's doing otherwise. Let the boy go make some money. Hell yeah.
So then, back to your life. You moved away and came back after college, you said?
After college, after marriage, after daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the same time as daughter. Was born. And my first job in Detroit was at the French consulate.
Oh.
Because I was very international minded at that point and so on. I couldn't find anything. I knew nobody here from the standpoint of jobs. Absolutely nobody. And I did that as a substitute until their summer staff came in, until their permanent staff came in. In the First National building, as a matter of fact. And then ultimately, everybody told me it's a good idea to have a teaching certificate. I did not waste my time at Smith College taking education courses, so for which I'm still grateful. But I took these rotten education courses at Wayne in order to qualify for the teaching certificate. But I took some history and economics too, so it wasn't, so it shouldn't be a total loss as the saying goes. Got the teaching certificate, but at that point, they really didn't want bright teachers in Detroit public school system. They had a system that they flashed your test scores behind you on the wall so that the interview panel could look at them and so on. And it was also policy that you give new people the very worst schools in terms of behavior and demographics and all that sort of thing. And the junior high they came up with, for me, I had heard stories about. And I decided I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So it was really not my cup of tea. I don't deal well with that. So I had passed, just because it was there, I had passed this personnel technician exam for the County Civil Service Commission, and I got the job. And at the time, you know, I was really very naive. I had no idea that it was a big deal to have a black person in that job, or a woman in that job. They'd never had either.
Oh, really?
Certainly nobody black. Now, they might have had somebody female before, but they didn't have them when I came on board. And I mean, all the hazards of the big city, I mean, the county was really vile in terms of wheeling and dealing politically. That was the Polish political enterprise. Polish and Irish combined.
Okay.
You know, every group gets its day. So, can you turn that a moment, please?
Okay, now, you were saying that when you started work for the county, what was the ambience?
Well, the politicking was really quite fierce. I think I was not really aware of it at the time, but over time I came to be aware.
Did you, when did you become aware that your being hired was unusual? And how
probably
did you
not until after I was gone.
How did you get to be hired? Do you know?
Oh, they saw this black woman who was presentable who came from Seattle.
Oh.
It's like everything else. If you're super nigger, they'll hire you. You know.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the person who was civil service.
And if there's only one of you.
The one who was executive director of the man who was executive director at that point had a lot of status ambitions. You know, Commodore, the boat club ultimately, and things of that sort. I was not really terribly aware of those things, and I've always been very suspicious of them because our family, among the black middle class folks, were held in dubious regard because of the numbers business, okay? And so as a young person growing up in Cleveland, I didn't really notice here, because I wasn't involved with the social life real big. But my aunt was very, very reticent about participation in social events that involved the black bourgeoisie.
Oh, really?
And did not hang out with that crowd at all. It was not until, I mean, the elite black middle class in Cleveland had a dancing club for their children, et cetera, et cetera. So I was never invited because my family did not participate in those things, all right? So apart from the Episcopal Church and the fact that she was interested in helping the blind and she did some things there, we were not involved. My uncle and his partner gave what was then a huge contribution for Caramel House in Cleveland, big cultural, black cultural center. I think they
Your
gave,
uncle from here?
No, from Cleveland.
From Cleveland.
Because the one that raised me, my mother's, my father's sister and her husband. He was in the same business in Cleveland.
Okay.
And I think they gave Caramel House $15,000, which was a huge amount of money at that time.
Well, who were the black bourgeoisie here?
Oh, you had a few doctors, probably with Sam Thomas at the top of the list, and a Dr. Chester Ames. And then you had a couple of ministers.
They were considered elite. They were
a couple of dentists. A Dr. Whitby,
okay.
And Haley Bell, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, everybody knew them all, because there were so few. It isn't like now, thank God, when, oh, where'd he come from? I never heard of him before.
Yeah, right.
It's very different now.
But then the people that have been more involved in the numbers associated with each other, and didn't associate with the others. Did that animosity, or whatever feeling it was, stay through the years?
After a period of time when the numbers money began to be wrapped up into various legitimate enterprises and so on, then they all wanted to hang out with those people because they had more money. I suddenly discovered in high school I became terribly popular.
Is that right?
Because I would have money enough to do it, whatever it was.
What, you know, when we were talking the other day, we were talking about, you said something about they had much more fun.
Oh, they did.
What do you remember of? What do you remember of the fun?
Well, they were all into... In Cleveland, my uncle got everybody into golfing, and they went to the big prize fights, no matter what town it was in, and so on. Those are things I remember.
Mm-hmm. What about here? Do you remember?
Golfing.
Golfing?
Mm-hmm. And the prize fights and so on. But the nice summers in the country. You know, it's not until now that I realize how nice it was. Those people could go to the country for a month and
not work.
Relax and so on. And they were, it was all perfectly all right. Or travel in the wintertime. They went to Mexico, to California, to Hot Springs, even to Hawaii.
So they had an
elegant life. My aunt and uncle went away every February. They were gone.
You know, one thing I read in a magazine article was that the Gotham did not have a liquor license.
They couldn't get it from the state. And it was because the state didn't want a black hotel to have a liquor license. And there was also a white nurse's residence across the street.
Yeah, that was why. You know, that's what
Well, you know, they were never going to permit those rowdy black men to drink near our precious white females. So they took the whole hotel for a parking lot.
Yeah.
Which is a crime.
Well, like they take everything else.
Well, please, don't talk about Ford Auditorium. Oh, get me going.
I won't say anything. No, that's
I'm
why
very
I'm stopping.
I'm upset about that.
That's why I'm stopping at 1967, because I don't want to get into anything, you know, that anybody has any problems with today.
You know, I'm a part of this administration, so I cannot publicly object.
Yeah.
But privately, I can bitch like a son of a gun.
Yeah. Well, the little Harry's sort of act.
Well, that isn't gone.
Yeah, but hopefully.
I just can't imagine who that earth with all the land that we want it for.
I know.
I mean, why would they want to tear it down?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
The space around it with so many other possibilities.
I mean, maybe I'm truly dense, but I do not understand it.
Yeah. No, I never, when you look at construction of buildings today, it doesn't make any kind of sense to tear a building down because almost any...
Oh, there are a lot of them I'd love to tear down.
Well, yes.
I suggested the Tiller when they were into them. I said, why not Anchor Grand Circus Park? I would like to tear quite a few down, as a matter of fact. They're ugly.
Yeah.
I don't believe in preserving for the sake of preserving.
Well, but there have been a lot that have gone down that...
We shouldn't have lost City Hall.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But other than that, I can't say that we have lost a great many that I'm brokenhearted
about. Well, things like, you know, that we don't even remember. For example, there was a... H.H. Richardson building where Greyhound bus station was. And that was many years ago.
That was too long for me to remember.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember the building, but I've
read about it. Shannon's Bar in the Greyhound, which used to be a very lively place. And I was sorry when that was gone.
What night spots do you remember? Time when you were hanging
out? The 3/6, of course. I was taken there for my 16th birthday. There was a club plantation on Adams that
was
in
the
basement. And I was taken there as a little girl. I don't think I was 5 years old. A friend of ours was the MC and a show producer. They had chorus girls and the whole bit. A whole vaudeville number. And what did they have? There was some place called the Frolic Show Bar, but I was never in there. But I remember the Flame up on Gen R. And maybe the Frolic was up there across from me. Might have been on the strip on Gen R. And the Garfield Lounge, I certainly remember. I heard Dorothy Ashby there for the first time. So those were the only clubs I knew.
Were there any other people that you think would be worth my talking to? Just in you know, in general. Anyone who has...
If you could find... I don't know, I think Sidney Bartwell is...
Yeah, I've interviewed him already. I'm going to talk with him. He's wonderful. He's great to talk
and
to.
And there's a lady in her 90s named Irene Hammond.
Irene Hammond.
She was the sister-in-law of this partner of mine.
Oh.
She lives at 649 Alger. I don't have her telephone.
Okay. Is she quite old?
Very
alert. Okay, I'll write to her.
You can tell how much Indian she has. It's just the way she's got the hawk nose, the reddish-brown skin, and this magnificent straight blood with gray hair that sort of has one deep wave or something. I've always been convinced she must have come from Oklahoma. But she's a very good lady.
Okay, well.
She knew a lot of these people. I can't think of anybody else around me. The other one just died, actually. A man named Willie Bunker.
No, I haven't heard of him. Yes, people are.
He used to be a lieutenant for John Michael.
Oh, okay. Some of the people that I'm interviewing are old and sickly and.
Of course, the Wingate family know all of them, but they're not going to talk to you.
Yeah, that's the other name. That's the other name.
A friend of mine used to call Ed Wingate Black Prince.
Okay.
But he doesn't fit with these other people.
Yeah, in fact, I've never.
They're much cruder and they don't have the same ethics.
Okay. And then Bunnell Pace, is that somebody?
Burl Pace.
Burl. Okay.
He's a sweetheart.
Yeah. But I haven't.
My stepfather came from Georgia together. From Columbus, Georgia.
I haven't gotten his name, but the Wingate, the Pace, and Cummings were names that Dr. Ardrey gave me, but he's never gotten around to getting me their addresses, so I'm going to have to lean on him a little and see if I can get him.
Yeah, I wouldn't ask the Wingate.
Okay, that's a good tip. Well, I think that what I'll do is see if Dr. Ardrey will sit down in a group with them, and maybe that will.
I don't think the Ardreys can talk to me.
Dr. Ardrey, he has talked to me.
No, Wingate.
No, the Wingate, no.
I don't think they
would. No, I won't talk to them, but maybe the others.
Junior, which is what they call Mr. Pace.
Yeah.
Is not really very well these days. I can talk to his friends.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I haven't. The only one of these that I have
here's
had.
Another
sister. Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, the only one that I had really talked to was Cummings. He was the only one whose name.
He's a very sweet man.
Yeah.
I don't know why he won't talk. It's a very important thing. I maybe could talk to him.
Yeah, if you have a chance.
Because it's very important. Or if he won't talk to you, he'll let me do it with the tape recording.
Okay.
It's a very important part of the life.
Yeah, I think it is important.
It's a positive part, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you've got all this ambition and management skills and so on, why should you be ashamed of it? Just because they said on a book it wasn't legal.
Yeah.
I mean, so what else is new?
Yeah.
Anything to keep us from making any money.
Yeah.
And they made some. And he said, well, I can see why he wouldn't talk to me. So they have two apartment buildings for the city to take for the Veterans Hospital.
Okay. Who is that? Who is?
He has two apartment buildings that they'll have to take for the land for the medical hospital.
Wait a minute. There's James Cummings. And there's Eddie Cummings. Okay, because James Cummings has two apartment buildings.
And
that's
interesting. Is James Cummings a son of Eddie Cummings?
No, well, James Cummings is in about his 70s or 80s.
Well, maybe his official name is James. I know.
No, but I've talked to James. And I've talked to Eddie and James.
Let me tell you, those rooms were Eddie's.
Well, maybe James, maybe they're not. Maybe it's a brother and he's just managing the building for him. Maybe that's it. Because this man, the way I happened on him was that I was having lunch with Jerry Crane, who, I don't know if you know who Jerry Crane is. He's a planner, and he designed the medical center. And I used to work for him many years ago, and we were having lunch. And he said, oh, there's this great guy over here who, he's really terrific, he has a great memory, and da-da-da. So we were on our way back from lunch, we drove by, and he said, oh, there he is, outside. And, you know, I went up and introduced myself, and maybe they are brothers.
Well, they must be, but I never